The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome into Students of the Game. My name is Alex Fallon, and I'm with Glidewell. Let's jump into AAA. First story we have today is the Detroit Pistons have hired former Phoenix Suns head coach Monty Williams to be the team's next head coach. Williams agreed to a six-year, $78.5 million contract, which is the largest coaching contract in NBA history. Nathan, what are your thoughts on the Pistons swinging for the fences and getting Monty Williams?
Oh, I mean, they hit big. I mean, Monty Williams, I've been high on Monty Williams. I really don't understand why the Suns, letting him go. I think that was probably the worst mistake they could have made. But the Pistons are getting an absolute steal here. I think Monty Williams is going to be a great coach for him. You think about where the Pistons are in their rebuild, having that young core with Cade Cunningham, Jaden Ivey, a bunch of these younger guys that have high potential. And I think Monty Williams is going to be that perfect guy to get them through that regular season and hopefully get them a playoff appearance and start getting them that experience that they need. But like I said, this is an absolute steal. Honestly, I thought Monty Williams was going to go to a much, bigger franchise than this, given that Detroit has not had a lot of success. But absolute steal.
Yeah, I think this is the best hire of this coaching cycle. And I think the best hire the Pistons have made in a long time at the head coach position. Monty Williams, like you mentioned, Nathan, I'm not sure why he was fired for the Phoenix Suns. He had great success there. He had a lot of rapport with guys like Devin Booker and I think KD. I think he has the opportunity to lead this Pistons team, maybe a playoff berth in the next couple of years. They have the guys, like you mentioned, Cade Cunningham, Jaden Ivey, Jalen Duren. I think this team is really poised for success. And the contract he got was absolutely amazing for me to see. That big of a contract go to a head coach. The Pistons really wanted this guy, and they got him. Moving on to the second story, the Phoenix Suns have hired Frank Vogel to be the team's next head coach. Nathan, what are your thoughts on the Suns of replacing Monty Williams with a glorified yes man in Frank Vogel?
Talk about an absolute downgrade. You know, I realize Frank Vogel won a championship with the Lakers, but I mean, honestly, that's not really his. That's LeBron's. But let's be honest here. LeBron coached that team. Frank Vogel just sat on the bench and, colored in his coloring book. That's what he did. Yeah, he clapped his hands, shook people's hands, waved at everyone, had a smile. Frank Vogel, he kind of gets bossed around by star players. I mean, you see what LeBron did to him. You kind of wonder what you talk about Devin Booker, you talk about KD, some of these bigger stars. I mean, they're kind of just going to run through him, I think. Dude doesn't really have a backbone. I think that's one thing that they're going to miss. I think they'll have a great regular season. That's just the type of team they have. But once it gets to the postseason, I think that they're going to really struggle. And it's going to be the fact that Frank Vogel struggles to make adjustments in game. You can talk to any Lakers fan who watched them. I mean, they can talk about that for hours. So going from a guy in Monty Williams, who I really think is one of the top tier head coaches in the league, to Frank Vogel, I can imagine a bigger downgrade.
Yeah, it felt like they kind of settled on Frank Vogel. I think Doc Rivers pulled his name out at the end, and then Nick Nurse got hired by the 76ers. So they kind of had to settle with Frank Vogel, probably the worst hire of this coaching cycle compared to what the Pistons did with Monty Williams. Like you mentioned, Nathan, I mean, he's really just going to sit there, clap his hands, cheer on the sideline like Thanasis Antetokounmpo does for the Bucks. I mean, he's not going to do much for you. I know he's known for his defensive schemes, but I don't see him getting the Suns over the hump that they've been failing to get over these past 2 and 3 years. Move on to the third story. SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey announced that the conference has approved a temporary 8-game conference schedule for the 2024 football season when Texas and Oklahoma join. The schedule discussed features one permanent opponent and 7 rotating opponents. There will also be no divisions with 2 teams with the best records going to the championship game. So, Nathan, what are your thoughts on this temporary schedule for 2024? And do you think we see it continue for years on? Or do you think there's a change, maybe?
Yeah, my first immediate thoughts were, no divisions, 2 best teams with the record. That means you can have a championship game with Alabama and Auburn. That's one of the craziest things to think about, having 2 opponents in the same division. But it's definitely going to make for more exciting games. I'm sure it's going to bring in more viewers. But, you know, I don't think that this is a permanent fix. I think there is a better option. You know, pods were discussed for a while, four different pods with, you know, a good set of rotating opponents. But just to have one permanent opponent, you know, it kind of opens up the gate to kind of lose some of these traditional games. You're talking about like Alabama, Tennessee, or Alabama, LSU, for example, or Auburn, Georgia. Some of these games can be flipped around. We might not see them play during a year. And I think that takes away from the competitiveness of, you know, these schools and the SEC in general. And, you know, with the addition of Texas and Oklahoma, I really want to see, you know, some of these bigger rivalries brought back. You talk about Texas, Texas A&M, I mean, Texas, Arkansas. We've seen, you know, opportunities for that to happen. I think this is going to be lined up with it. But it's definitely going to be interesting to see when the first schedule comes out, who will be playing each other. But at the end of the day, this is not a permanent fix for me. I think they can do a little bit better.
Yeah, like you mentioned, Nathan, I think the no divisions is a good addition. We've seen in the past couple of years, some questionable teams from each division kind of making it to the championship game, the SEC championship game. A couple of years, we saw Missouri make it, and they stood no chance against Alabama and Auburn. There was a team last year, LSU, I know they ended up winning it. They beat Alabama and stuff like that, but they got absolutely throttled by Georgia. So I think getting some of these and I think if they didn't, if it was no divisions, I think Tennessee would have been in that championship game, if I'm not mistaken. I feel like having no divisions is a good plus for this conference. And like you mentioned, I don't think the one permanent opponent, seven rotating opponents, is going to be a permanent thing. I think we're looking at maybe three permanent opponents and five or six rotating, depending on if they do an eight or nine game schedule going forward. I think, like you mentioned, they got to keep these rivalries they have. You have Georgia, they have Florida, and they have Auburn. And I just do not see the SEC willing to give up either one of those games for Georgia, because those are their big money makers. Those sell the tickets. Those get people in the seats. They get people on television to watch those games. Hopefully the SEC gets to the point where they have those three permanent opponents, because they really need it. Moving on to the fourth story, it has been announced that Netflix plans to release a documentary called Swamp Kings, which will cover Urban Meyer's Florida teams from 2006 to 2009, and it'll be released on August 23rd of this year. The teams were mentioned won two national championships and included players such as Tim Tebow, Aaron Hernandez, and Cam Newton. Nathan, what are your thoughts on this new documentary coming out, and will you sit down and watch it?
First of all, I mean, are they going to like film in a state penitentiary? Because I mean, a good majority of Florida's 2008 national championship team they were arrested. 141 players, 41 of them were arrested. That's crazy to think about. I think that's one of the main things people think about when they think back to, you know, Urban Meyer's years at Florida. But, you know, it's kind of difficult to watch as an Alabama fan, seeing Florida have success, especially, you know, beginning years of Nick Saban. They were always the team to beat in the SEC championship. I know we got over the hump, but still, there were a few games in there I would rather not watch, and I'm sure, I mean, they're going to be talked about. So at the end of the day, I'm probably not going to end up watching it, but I'm sure it's going to be a great series, and it's definitely going to get some insight into how Urban Meyer coached and what some of these players were going through at the time at Florida.
Yeah, I think this is one of the most anticipated documentaries after, you know, The Last Dance and stuff like that, the Matateo one as well. I'm really excited to see how they handle, like you mentioned, Nathan, all these players that they were arrested. You had Aaron Hernandez got arrested for murder and obviously ended up committing suicide in prison. And then you had a safety there, Tony Joyner. He had to reach a plea deal after facing murder charges for his wife. And there's just all these other players that really dealt with these arrests. I'm interested to see how they handle that. And then interviewing Urban Meyer, who, you know, in the last couple of years has not been looked at in the brightest light, especially with his time with the Jaguars. I'm really excited to see what Netflix does with this. All right, Nathan, what do we got for week 8 at the USFL?
Yeah, jumping right into our award winners, offensive player of the week being New Orleans Breakers wide receiver Johnny Dixon with 9 receptions, 136 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Why this was not Alex McGee, I have no idea. I voted. I know some
same
people
here.
Voted. Yeah, but he didn't win, so let's go ahead and move on to defensive player of the week being Michigan Panthers linebacker Frank Ginda with, I think this is third time winning at this point. He had 11 tackles, two tackles for losses, and an interception. And the special teams player of the week being Memphis Showboat's kicker, Alex Kessman, who went 6 for 6 on field goals, 19 points. You know, and that's crazy because the Showboat's only scored 25 of them. you know, immediate thing, the South played the North again. And like we saw, I think this was week I forget what week it was, Alex. You remember week four, maybe?
Probably when they all played.
Yeah. Anyway, same thing happened. South dominates, going 4-0 against the North. Poverty North at this point. but, you know, at the end of all the dust settling, no teams have clinched a playoff spot. No teams have been eliminated. All teams are 2-2 in their respective divisions. And, you know, at the end of the season, every team in the South will finish 500 or better, which means that some people will be very disappointed when their team doesn't make the playoffs and has that good record. Looking at their current standings, the Stallions at the top of the South at 6-2, Showboats, Breakers, and Game Rulers all following up at 5-3. And the North, the Stars, have a record of 4-4, Panthers falling with a 3-5 record, and the Generals and Maulers tied for last place with a 2-6 record. So really tight race coming up here, seeing who gets into the playoffs, who sneaks in with these final two weeks remaining. Let's go ahead and jump into our first game of the weekend. It was the Houston Gamblers taking on the Pittsburgh Maulers. Houston got the win 20-19. The Maulers dominated the time of possession with 40 minutes to just the Gamblers 20. the Maulers ran 16 more plays than the Gamblers. The Maulers outgained the Gamblers 326 yards to the Gamblers 266. There were no turnovers in this game. But, you know, at the end of the day, the Maulers could not get it done with all that time and all those plays ran, and all those yards gained. How can you not win this game? Looking at what the Gamblers did, they went 1 out of 1 in the red zone. Quarterback Kenji Bihar, he had a decent week. He, you know, it's the same thing, Alex, we talked about. He's still kind of coming back from that injury. He doesn't look like the same, but he did have a better week this week, going 11 of 20, 146 yards, and a passing touchdown. But really, you know who you're scary by, running back Mark Thompson, who has been outstanding for this Gamblers team week in, week out. He had 14 carries for 98 yards and 2 touchdowns, including a 33-yard game winner with 4 minutes and 51 seconds left. He's also the all-time spring football rushing touchdown leader in the 21st century with 13 rushing touchdowns, which is crazy to believe, speaking of that West Hills has looked pretty good this year too. Moving on to talk about the receiver room for this Gamblers team. It really just did not step up for him, Alex. And this is one of the things I've questioned about this Gamblers team for a while. They have not had a go-to target in this wide receiving room. We talk about wide receiver Justin Hall and what he's done throughout the season. He's had games where he stepped up, but in this game, he only had 3 receptions for 40 yards. And outside of that, you had wide receiver Kiki Chisholm with 2 receptions, 36 yards, and a touchdown. The ball has really been spread around a lot, but there's not that go-to target, which makes you a little bit worrisome for this Gamblers team. However, they did get the win this week, so I can't be too critical with them. Looking at what the Maulers did, they went 1 out of 3 in red zone touchdowns. Quarterback Troy Williams had a decent week. I think he's definitely improved a lot, but he's still on that island. He went 20-26, 214 yards, as well as 7 carries for 36 yards and a rushing touchdown. But what it comes down to is that rushing game is just non-existent. He gets no help outside of his receiving room. You talk about what wide receiver Bailey Gaithers has been able to do for Troy Williams. He had 6 receptions for 70 yards in this game. Wide receiver Isaiah Henney had 4 receptions for 66 yards. But it's just the amount of times they struggled to find the end zone in this game is very disappointing to see. It's been a problem all season for this smaller team, and this offense has just continued to sputter out when it needs to, you know, find the end zone in these close games. You know, I will say this, you know, the Maulers had an opportunity to win this game. Kicker Chris blew it, missing a 41-yard field goal with 1:55 left, which would have given the Maulers a 2-point lead. Not saying that the Gamblers wouldn't have been more aggressive and came down and scored a touchdown or, you know, kicked a field goal to win the game, but they did have that chance. But this Maulers team continues to look pitiful, and you know they're a week away from being out of this playoff scenario, which is pretty surprising given that they looked so much better a few weeks ago.
Yeah, the Burger King franchise I'm starting up has 2 new additions to it. The Maulers offensive coordinator will be there, as well as Chris Blewitt, the kicker. Both those guys really sold this game. Looking at the offense, you had the ball for almost 40 minutes, and you only scored 19 points. That's pretty pitiful. Troy Williams really played his tail off, but his running attack was pretty pitiful. Marjorie London had 41 yards, and Garrett Grushek only had 22 yards, and he had 11 carries. It's been all season. We've seen it game in, game out, where he gets almost no help from his running backs. I feel bad for Troy Williams. Like you mentioned, Nathan, he's on an island now. I feel like if he's on a team like the Generals or something like that, he'd be much better off because he's a really talented player in this USFL. Chris Blewitt, I don't know how you're in the USFL at this point. You probably need to go find an insurance agent job or something because you miss a chip shot 41-yard field goal. I'm pretty sure I could go out there and make that field goal. Dude's atrocious. See you at Burger King. Looking at the Gamblers, really, really lucky to get out of this game with a win. If they gave the Stallions the ball for 40 minutes, this game probably would have not been close. Kenji Bahar, like you mentioned, Nathan, continues to look like he's battling that injury a little bit. Hopefully we can get back to 100% very soon. Mark Thompson continues to be the best running back in this league. 98 yards, 2 touchdowns. He was really the catalyst that got this offense going, got them that win. But Nick Vogel almost sold this game, missed an extra point. So both kickers this game really, really, really want to go work at Burger King. Hopefully the Gamblers can get a win next week, maybe clinch these playoffs.
You know, Alex, I think at this point we need to go ahead and start a Kickstarter for your Burger King franchise, get you up and running here, get some people flipping some burgers. Let's move on to our second game of the weekend, being the Birmingham Stallions taking on the Philadelphia Stars. Birmingham got the win 27-24 in an all-time classic. The Stallions outgained the Stars 429 yards to 349 yards, and both teams had pretty much equal time of possession. Let's start off looking at what the Stallions were able to do. They went 3 out of 5 on red zone touchdowns, 7.4 yards per play, and pretty much the absolute MVP of the season. I don't think it's close at this point, Alex. Quarterback, no. Alex McGee, going 24-35, 333 passing yards, 3 touchdowns for the air, as well as 5 carries for 19 yards. He did have a fumble lost, but that was on a mishap on a snap, so not really a huge deal. But he continues to be just the whole offense for Birmingham. TJ Merrill did have a decent game with 11 carries for 56 yards. He did have a major fumble loss in the red zone when the Stallions were looking to score. So he might have been working at Burger King too, if not had been for Alex McGee. But really, this wide receiver room—they just we've challenged them to step up these past few weeks, and they have. Talk about wide receiver Davion Davis, what he was able to do: 4 receptions, 120 yards, and a touchdown. He's also joined by Jay Sternberger with 3 receptions, 62 yards, and a touchdown. And Deion Kane giving a pretty good bit of production with 6 receptions for 51 yards. But, you know, the main guy I want to talk about is tight end Michael Pettway, who, you know, only had 2 receptions in this game for 19 yards, but he gets a game-winning touchdown with 32 seconds left. Talk about a guy who just comes in and really, under all this pressure, makes this huge catch. A lot of props to him and what this wide receiver room was able to do. You look at the Stallions defense, I think they struggled a little bit throughout this game, just, you know, defending the pass. We'll talk about what Case Cook is and that offense was able to do in the passing game here in a minute. But, you know, when it came down to it, defensive back Nate Brooks was all over the place with his 6 tackles, 2 solo tackles, and that game-sealing interception at the end. But, you know, this defense continues to look pretty good, and really it's the backbone of this team when it has struggled on the offensive end. And I continue to believe that if the Stallions defense plays this way, that they're online for another championship. Looking at what the Stars were able to do, they went 2 out of 3 on red zone touchdowns. Case Cookis was nothing short of amazing. You know, if it hadn't been that they lost this game, you'd be looking at him for Offensive Player of the Week. He went 20-32, 265 passing yards, and 3 touchdowns. And of course, that 1 interception on the last play of the game. But, you know, he was really just the catalyst for this Stars team that really needed to have that offensive production. Alex, we've talked week in, week out about how Case Cookis does not get any help. But this week, you had running back Dexter Williams step up with his 15 carries, 52 yards, as well as his 4 receptions for 23 yards and a touchdown. He was also joined by wide receiver Corey Coleman with 4 receptions, 107 yards, and a touchdown, and wide receiver Devin Gray with 4 receptions for 74 yards. Matt Colburn did lead the game in the first quarter with an injury. Alex, I'm sure you're going to have to talk about him, give him some, get well soon cookies. This Stars team improved a lot this week on the offensive end, and that's something that we haven't seen throughout this season. It's been one of the main reasons they've struggled. This offensive line has struggled to block against good defensive lines, good pass rushes. It seems like Casey Cookus was running for his life for the most part. But in this game, pass protection was superb. They went to the quick pass pretty much 90% of the time and really got the Stallions defense out of position. And if it not had been for them scoring so fast, I believe they scored with 3 minutes left, they probably could have won this game. But simply the fact that they gave the Titans way too much time, I think there should have been some better game management on the offensive end. Talk about what the offensive coordinator should have done better. I think that's one of the things they should have managed the clock better. But you know, at the end of the day, this offense was really one of the reasons that they should have won this game. Looking at the defense, they forced two fumbles and recovered two fumbles. But for the most part, they weren't able to get a lot of pressure on Alex McGill. They only had two sacks in this game, and they really struggled. They found themselves out of position whenever plays broke down. Alex McGill was so good at just running out, outside the pocket and making things happen, and his receivers just adjust well to the ball. And it seemed like every time that happened, the Stars defense was just nowhere to be found. And that's one of the major things that, stopped them from winning this game. And that it's been something that's been consistent all season long. This defensive back room needs to step up, especially with these 2 weeks left in the season, and hopefully secure that playoff spot.
Yeah, I think this was one of the best, if not the best game of the new USFL. I think it was honestly better than the championship game we saw last year between the Stars and the Stallions. But looking at the Stallions, like you mentioned, Nathan, Alex McGill continues to be the MVP of this league. It continues to get help CJ Marable. Davion Davis stepped up, Jay Sternberger. But that pass to Michael Pettway, if you listen to the commentators and the communication between Skip Holtz and Alex McGill, Skip Holtz really asked Alex McGill what he wanted on that final drive in that red zone, especially on that final play. And he did what Alex McGill wanted, and they got the touchdown. And that really shows Skip Holtz the trust he has in Alex McGill as a quarterback and as a player, and the trust Alex McGill has in a guy like Michael Pettway, who's not really the starting tight end. He's more of a backup and third string, depending on if you want Thaddeus Moss in that role. But Michael Pettway, amazing catch, amazing play called by Skip Holtz. Great execution from them. That defense stepped up in that final minute of the game, or final 30 seconds. Nate Brooks got the interception. The Stallions defense looks like it's turning a corner with JoJo Tillery back in that backfield leading it. The Stallions team, like you mentioned, Nathan, is really poised for another championship run. Looking at the Stars, if the Stallions did not get that touchdown, this would be, like you mentioned, Nathan, Casey Cookus would be obviously, I think, the offensive player of the week. Really improved these last 2 and 3 weeks with his performances. And Dexter Williams, another great game from him. It was sad to see Matt Colburn go out with an injury. I was really hoping he was going to come and give us another 60 yards on the ground or something. But I will be sending him some good get well soon cookies with a good card. Corey Coleman continues to be probably the best wide receiver in the league. Just the fact the Stars defense did not get that final stop of the game. Hopefully the Stars can turn around next week and clinch a playoff spot.
Yeah, I mean, this game, you said it right, Alex. I mean, it was probably one of the best games we've seen in a while. I don't know if I would push it as far as, last year's championship game, but it definitely was really good and really exciting to watch, honestly, on either side, despite the results. Moving on to our first Sunday game, the Memphis Showboats took on the New Jersey Generals. The Showboats ended up getting the win 25-16. The Showboats dominated the time of possession 40 minutes, just the Generals 20. And the Showboats ran 27 more plays than Generals, as well as outgaining them 317 yards to 246 yards. Alex, the Showboats offense is... it's crap. I'm going to be honest. It makes me sick. Every single time we have to come in here and talk about it, it makes me want to throw up just because there's no efficiency. There is no getting in the end zone. It's just relying on your running game and your kicking game. They went 1 out of 5 on red zone touchdowns. Quarterback Cole Kelly, the glorified game manager, comes out. And he has 15 and 24, 176 yards. And he throws an interception, no passing touchdowns. But really, it's just the reliance on the running game at this point. You talk about running back Kareth White, 23 carries, 102 yards on the ground, and a touchdown. And he was also joined by, a very inefficient Jawan Washington with his 10 carries for 11 yards. I think I could have done better there. This receiving room, we talked about Derek Dillon going – being that go-to target in these past weeks, but it wasn't like that this week. All these receivers and tight ends had three receptions each, all for around 30 to 40 yards. So there's no go-to guy. But really, it's just this defense stepping up for the Showboats. You talk about linebacker Greg Reeves. He had three tackles, a tackle for loss, and an interception, as well as two passes defended. But this Showboats seemed, just – it finds a way to win every week. I don't know how, because that's their fifth straight win, longest win streak of the season. We talked about special teams player of the week, Alex Kessman, 6 for 6 on field goals and 1 for 1 on extra points, given the one time they did find the end zone. But it was really a Luis Aguilar situation like we saw before, Alex. Like we said for a few weeks now, special teams wins games, and that just remains to be disproven. You talk about Derek Dillon as a kick returner this week. He had 4 returns for 122 yards. He continues to be stellar in the return game. I think he's probably one of the best returnmen in the league at this point, similar to what Kevontae Turpin did a year ago. But the Showboats team, it's crap to watch. And I'm tired of watching them play like this, but if they keep winning, we're going to have to see more of it. Looking at the other side, this general scene went 2 out of 2 in the red zone on touchdowns. But, Alex, we've talked about it for a while. They're running back this two quarterback system, and it just has not worked. And I don't know what it takes to get it through their heads that this is not going to work. This week, they decided to start quarterback Dakota Prock up. He went 14, 25, 128 passing yards, and 2 passing touchdowns, as well as an interception. He also had 6 carries for 76 yards and was the team's leading rusher. Kyle Laletta, he had 4 passing attempts, completing 2 of those for 16 yards, and he had an interception. But this team cannot figure anything out on the offensive end. The running game, Darius Victor has not looked the same. He had 9 carries for 26 yards. He did have 6 receptions for 39 yards and a touchdown, but he was the team's leading receiver. It's just one of those things where you really wonder, is this team real? Was this game actually played? did they really do this? It makes you do a double take. One of the main things is General's defense stepped up this week. They did great, having a sack, 10 tackles for losses, an interception, 3 passes defended, and a fumble recovery. The defense got around. You had 2 linebackers with over 10 tackles. Both had over 5 solo tackles. But at the end of the day, your offense looks like this. You're not going to come out and win the game. And they have no special teams to rely on at this point. I think this was a very winnable game, but the simple fact that they keep running this two quarterback system makes them, fall time and time again.
Yeah, we got another addition to my Burger King staff now. Mike Riley, the head coach of the Generals, will be joining the Maulers offensive coordinator and Chris Blewett this week. They had a chance to win it at the end. They had a 4th and 10, and Dakota Prock up through a pass that went 1 yard, one single yard. I don't know who drew up that play, who chose that play, but it was atrocious. And before that 4th down play, Prock up through 3 straight incomplete passes. I mean, it looks like Mike Riley and the offensive coaching staff is just lost on how to call a game. Luis Perez, they really need him back. They need to go get him from the XFL or something. Darius Victor, like you mentioned, Nathan, is not the same running back we saw last year. It's just like this offense is lost without a guy in Kevontae Turpin to really give it that go. The Generals' defense did give them what they needed to do, like you mentioned, Nathan. They held the Showboats' offense to 1 out of 5 on red zone touchdowns. They had 2 amazing linebackers, what they did this game, Chris Orr and Colin Hill. They forced turnovers. They had 10 tackles for loss. I mean, you can't ask more from a defense in a football game than what the Generals were able to do. Looking at the Showboats, Cole Kelly, I'm at a loss for words of why he isn't the USFL. I think I could pick up a guy off the street to come in and do what he does in a game. I mean, he literally just throws the ball up and down the field and get manages the game. I mean, he's not very talented whatsoever. Kareth White, he continues to be him and Juwan Washington continue to be the reliant guys on the offensive side of the football at running back. Their defense did not have, you know, an amazing game. Did not record a single sack, had two TFLs, but they had two interceptions and forced a fumble. So those forced turnovers against the Generals offense were really the main reason why the Showboats were able to get this win. Kicker Alex Kessman, a great performance from him. This Showboats team, to me, is really a South version of the Stars. Just Cole Kelly is 1,000 times worse than Case Cookus.
You know, I couldn't have summed it up any better myself. I mean, it's honestly identical at this point. I think that the Showboats defense is a little bit better, but for the most part, it's identical. Well, Alex, you got a pretty good Burger King franchise running at this point. Well, let's see if we can add in more people with this last game of the week, being the Michigan Panthers taking on the New Orleans Breakers. The Breakers ended up getting the win 24-20. The Breakers dominated time possession 33 minutes to 26, ran 13 more plays than the Panthers, and outgained them 357 yards to 242. And originally the Panthers were down 21-0 in the second quarter, but obviously they did fight back. But you know, they come up short. You look at this Panthers offense. So start out with them going 0-2 on red zone touchdowns. Josh Love had I think he had a pretty good game. You know, he went 22-32, 221 passing yards and two touchdowns. And then he did have an interception on the last play of the game. But for the most part, it goes back to the same thing we've talked about for a while now with this running game for the Panthers. If it doesn't get going, if they don't have a balanced attack, then they're going to struggle. Running back Reggie Corbin only had 11 carries, 45 yards, as well as two receptions for 19 yards. And he was the only running back used this week. If that's the only back being used, you expect more production. You expect him to get the ball more often. You know, only running the ball 11 times is not going to win you a game. Looking at this wide receiver room, it goes back to, you know, being spread out. Two tight ends were in use this week with Marcus Ball, two receptions, 54 yards, and a touchdown. And also joined by Cole Hinkindu, with five receptions for 27 yards. But it goes back to, you know, no one receiver stepping up for this Panthers offense. You know, last week it was Joe Walker, but he only had five receptions for 58 yards this week. He didn't get the majority of receptions. And I think that's one thing that Joshua should be more reliant on, but it didn't happen this week. You talk about the Panthers defense and what, you know, defensive player of the week linebacker Frank Genda has been able to do. I mean, he really puts the team on his back with 11 tackles, 8 solo tackles, 2 tackles for losses, and an interception. You know, the defense in general with 2 sacks, 8 tackles for losses, 2 interceptions, as well as 2 forced fumbles and 1 being recovered. They really got after it. But for the most part, it really comes down to this offense, you know, not being able to get going and finding consistent answers in the red zone. Looking at what the Breakers are able to do, 2 out of 4 on red zone touchdowns. You know, McLeod Bethel Thompson, who has had some pretty poor weeks the past few games, they finally come out and get a win after losing 3 straight. He went 25-34 with 328 passing yards and 2 touchdowns. He also had 2 interceptions. But Wes Hills, you know, I really question where he's been at. And what he continues to do. He had 23 carries for 36 yards. Go ahead and pause for laughter because that is pitiful. He did have a rushing touchdown, but he did have a fumble loss. And with this game, he set a new modern USFL record for rushing yards in the season. But, you know, this is just not a great game for him. You talk about wide receiver Johnny Dixon winning Offensive Player of the Week with his 9 receptions, 136 yards, and 2 touchdowns. And he's also joined by wide receiver Jonathan Adams, who had 8 receptions for 117 yards. Both these guys just absolutely dominated against this Panthers defense, especially that secondary. They seem to really struggle to keep up with them. It almost looks like the same way the Stallions play these two guys, because they found a lot of success against that defense as well. But at the end of the day, I really you look at this Breakers team and how they struggled to really seal and finish this game out. Especially only being able to score 3 points in the second half, which, you know, is really crazy. And it really says a lot about this team who, you know, only a few weeks ago was 4-0 and looked like an unbeatable team. But, you know, at the end of the day, the Panthers not being able to get it done in the offensive end really, you know, stopped them from winning this game. And, you know, the North doesn't get a single win against the South this week. And you really question how good some of these North teams are.
Unfortunately, I do not have any additions to my Burger King staff from this game, even though Bethel Thompson is really aiming for it with way performing that second half. The Panthers were down by 21 points, Nathan, like you mentioned. It was good to see them able to battle back to within four. Unfortunately, Josh Love and that offense were not able to get it done in that final possession. Josh Love has played great these last 3 weeks, I think, even though two of them ended up in a loss. He continues to play very well. Reggie Corbin, I know he only had 45 yards on the ground, but that's much improved what he was doing in previous weeks. I know we had a pretty good week last week. But Joe Walker, not a great game, 58 yards receiving. The receiving threats really did okay this game. But that defense for the Panthers really stepped up when they needed it, really shut down that Breakers offense. After that 21-0 lead they went on, Frank Ginda, great performance from him. It's just the Panthers defense was not able to do it all. They really gave the offense that chance at the end, just could not convert. Looking at the Breakers, they had a 21-0 lead. And the fact, like you mentioned, Nathan, they only scored 3 points the rest of the game. I'm really scratching my head trying to figure out why John DeFilippo and that offense can't make adjustments, because it feels like every week they fail to make adjustments when teams figure them out. Bethel Thompson had a really great start, but then followed it up with two interceptions. These turnovers are really becoming an issue in these later weeks of the season. He's got to get them under control. I know they got the win here, but those two turnovers in a playoff game could be very, very costly. Got to get that under control. Wes Hills has got to get back on track. It's been like 3 or 4 weeks where he has not performed well. But the receivers here really stepped up for Bethel Thompson in that offense. I do not think Johnny Dixon should have won Offensive Player of the Week. I think Malik McGough's performance was much better, had much more impact on the game than somebody like Johnny Dixon. But I obviously was not getting the votes for Alex McGough there. I think the Breakers are not going to have an opportunity to make the playoffs. I do not see this team the way they're currently performing to make the playoffs in the South, especially with how competitive the Showboats and the Gamblers have been.
Yeah, you really think about, you know, how much the team has turned the ball over the past few weeks, and especially in this week where, you know, you have these three turnovers. It's really the difference between you making the playoffs or missing the playoffs, given the race is so tight. And unfortunately this week, you know, they were able to get out with a win. But the way this Breakers offense has been performing, it really looks like it's on its last legs. and, you know, someone needs to go ahead and patch up Wes Hills before he loses an arm and a leg. But, you know, like I said, Alex, you know, it's 2 weeks left. You know, you have that 3-way tie in the South. So it's really anyone's playoff spot at this point. The Sirens could still be out of the playoffs. So, you know, it's not like the season is over yet. But, you know, things are coming down to the wire. You got to stick with it. You got to, you know, play your best football these last 2 weeks. And, you know, whatever happens, happens.
If it's anyone's season. All right, that's all we have time for today. Thank you for listening to Students of the Game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.